Good morning and welcome to the Breakfast Show on Faith FM. You're listening across Australia on 87.6, 87.8 or 88, depending on where you are or on our Faith FM app. I'm your host, Joseph Scaff, and I'm in the studio with Lawson and Shell. Good morning, Lawson. Good morning, Shell. And good morning to our listeners in Benalla, Victoria.
Oh, wow.
Who are hearing us on 87.6. Lawson, the thought of the day, I brought one for us today. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 4. It says that God will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many peoples. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore.
We're seeing a picture of a world in which violence and warfare is subsided for peace, prosperity.
It's gone.
Yeah.
God's desire is a desire for peace.
Yes.
And you know what I like about this passage, Lawson? It says that it was not God that will beat their swords into plowshares as if forcing them out of their guns and say, hey, give me your guns, give me your swords, let me transform them into plowshares. They themselves will be so convinced, they will be so touched by the revelation of God that the nations themselves says, you know what? Why have we been fighting for?
Yeah, it's powerful. I think that on this earth and the picture that God gives us of prophetically of what the world will look like before he comes back is quite different to that. But after he comes back in a time of peace, in a time where sin has subsided, like people are going to want prosperity and peace more than anything else. And that's because that's who God is. He's a God of peace, a God of love, a God of shalom, as we say.
Amen. And coming up in today's show, Lawson's going to talk to us about country living. We're going to also have a look into Russia's Orthodox Church shocking Easter message. We're going to talk about natural selection in our interview. And today we're starting a new study about the great controversy, the great battle between good and evil. You cannot miss today's show.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Joseph, question one for our quiz this week. A shortened quiz, so that means, guys, less opportunities to get in because, of course, we didn't have Monday. But mate, we have a fantastic prize. So you are going to want to be playing for this. Joseph, if you can get us that question, please.
Yes, we want to know who was called a mighty hunter in Genesis chapter 10. Genesis chapter 10 tells about a man who was one of the most famous big leaders at the time, and he was called a mighty hunter. Who was that person? If you do know the answer, send us your text to 0491-064-669. Who was called a mighty hunter in Genesis 10? And today's prize
is amazing.
This week's prize is pretty good, isn't it, Lawson?
It's awesome because we just realized what you guys want. And that is money. Now, we're not just giving you, like, you know, cash in hand, but we are giving you an amazing gift voucher for Better Books and Foods, one of the premier book, health food, Christian shops in Australia.
I would say the world.
In the world, we would say. You know, there's like kind of branches of it in different countries, either Better Books and Foods or ABC. But yeah, fantastic stuff. You want this prize. Again, who was called a mighty hunter in Genesis 10? Also a pretty important figure in paganism or ancient Near Eastern paganism. We're giving you a few clues this morning. But again, that number 0491-064-669. Hey, we've got a text message in from my good friend Wayne. Wayne-o, who writes in all the time. He writes in his devotions and they're powerful. He says, this morning, reading how God leads us and is leading us in Exodus 13:21, and the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud and led the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night through the Dark Ages and the abomination of desolation. And then in Revelation, quoting Revelation 11:3, he says, "And I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth." So we're seeing a bit of a, you know, some verses regarding God's leading, some verses regarding the Dark Ages here as represented in Bible prophecy. And he concludes, he says, "God leads us now through many Dark Ages, an abomination of desolation to come. God continues to give up power to his two witnesses." This is the Old and New Testament. And we're seeing some application here of Bible prophecy, and from what I'm reading, correct ones at that. This is a powerful, powerful passage. And what it ultimately shows us is God is wanting to lead in our lives. And I think he's wanting to do so in, well, through the Old and, I should say, the two witnesses, which are the Old and New Testament, but also through the power of his Spirit. And I just want to talk about today about God's leading and where he could potentially lead us to and some of the principles that the Bible's holds regarding country living.
Wait. Are you telling us that the Bible does talk about country living as opposed to city living?
Yeah, 100%.
How does that work,
100%. Lawson? Well, I think from example, you know, you don't often see in the Bible many wilderness areas being destroyed for their sinfulness versus the amount of cities in the Bible that are, or, you know, whether it's the city of Sodom and Gomorrah or Edom or, you know, this or that or the old
Babylon
or the Tower of Babel. You know, it's usually in this congregation that people are together. That's where destruction takes place.
Okay.
Versus out in the wilderness. But I've got some principles here with some Bible verses. And what inspired me to do this is I saw a story on ABC Good News, and it was just about a couple from London who have moved to rural Queensland, and they bought a vineyard.
Oh, that was a bold move
out there, which is huge. They were like, "We want to get out of the cities." Now they are using the vineyard to like make wine and alcohol, which is not something that we would recommend here on the Breakfast Show.
Not at all.
We are very much pro-prohibition, or you could say, you know, an abstinence from alcohol drinking. But there are some real awesome principles that I see here that will be a benefit to you and your family as well. The first one is, and I'm gonna go with principle, and then I'm gonna read the Bible verse that connects to it. More space and privacy. As the Bible says in Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 8, "Woe to those who join house to house. They add field to field, and there is no place where they may dwell alone in the midst of the land." I think community is incredibly important. Don't get me wrong.
I
think church is one of the most amazing institutions that God has risen up for us, you know, has created for us to take part in simultaneously. Have that space to be able to live life, but furthermore, connect with God in your own soul and your own being, in a space where you can live on the land. And I think we're going to see that throughout some of these principles, the idea of how amazing it is to be in God's land that he has created for us to enjoy in nature.
It's true, Lawson. You know, not that you're saying this, our mind is great at recalling things. Whenever we see something, our mind generates thoughts about it. So if we're seeing man-made things or cars and business, well, guess what? Our minds will be drawn to business and the chaos and so on. But if we were living in the midst of nature, well, then our minds will naturally be drawn to God and to the things that he created, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, we will be in an environment that points us to him. As, you know, we're reading Wayne's text message, you know, God wanting to lead us as a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire. It can be hard to discern God's leading when we're surrounded by, you know,
concrete.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
yes,
the cares of this world. Whereas when we're in the country, we can be spending time in nature, reflecting on God, who he is, and he can lead us through
the still small voice. It's true. And Lawson, it's so interesting because when we want to take holidays and we just came out from an extended holidays.
Yeah.
When we want to take holidays, we often want to surround ourselves with nature. We pay money, big money sometimes, 100%. To go to beautiful places. Mm. Wouldn't it be great if that could be just our normal abode?
That's right. 100%. I want to read a few more principles here.
Go ahead.
Some interesting things. This next one here, cleaner air and water. This is Isaiah chapter 43. It says, give waters in the wilderness and rivers in the desert to give drink to my people, my chosen. He doesn't say, hey, I ran a stream through Jerusalem. He doesn't say, hey, I have a pond in any other Israelite city. You know, he says, hey, in the wilderness is where we'll go to drink. In the wilderness is where we'll go to breathe. And because, yeah, just less pollution, more natural, better for us as well. Safer environment with less vice and crime.
Yes, that's this an is important a big one.
Psalm 55 and verse 9, the Bible says, destroy, O Lord, and divide their tongues, for I've seen the violence and strife in the city. And we know this from, you know, whether anecdotally or from data as well, regarding particularly, you know, people growing up in the cities and whatnot, the struggle of inner city schools to be able to educate children and keep them on the right path and whatnot, because of the amount of crime that goes on. And again, the divided attention and the distraction that can take place. It's, and this is a big thing. Maybe you're hearing me now and you're like, oh, but Lawson, like, we're going through a housing crisis. You know, how can I buy, you know, I just got my house. How
that
can I buy
a good question.
Land in the country and whatnot? Well, thankfully also, like, land in the country is usually, there's a lower cost of living of, you know, going out there, and land in the country can be cheaper. I know some of my friends who have bought incredibly inexpensive blocks of land out countryside and built their own houses and whatnot. But still, it's like, hey, I've worked hard enough to get this investment. What am I supposed to do? Well,
and particularly these days as well, where you can work from home. There's so many opportunities to work from home, isn't it?
Yeah,
and to have
absolutely.
Internet, even at remote places, I think it's making that more affordable.
But even in a place maybe of transition, maybe you've said in your heart, like, hey, I want to get into this environment, but I can't get there yet. Well, exposure, and especially for you, and especially if you have kids, if you have a young family, getting them out there and exposed to nature and living in these kinds of environments is so positive. I can speak.
I like what you said, Lawson. I think this is the ideal. Living in the country may not be for everyone in this age. That being said, well, this is an ideal, and I think we can have as much as a country living life as we possibly can. Even if we can't afford land, for example, or a house, we can surround ourselves with nature as much as we can possibly do so, with our kids, with ourselves. And in this way, we will be reaping some of the benefits, at least.
Absolutely.
Of the environment that God has intended for us.
And I can say, so I'm, you know, involved, I was involved at Newcastle Uni, here at Avondale University. Some of the smartest, most well-equipped people that I know for the university environment are from, like, Narromine, Dorrigo, like, living in the country, growing up shearing sheep, and then they get into the academic environment and they've just got a clear head, amazing principles, and they just kill it. Like, I can just see so clearly this is a blessing that God wants to give us, living in his nature.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
And now, before we go to our current affairs part two, Lawson, do we have a second quiz for our listeners?
Yes, we do. In what book am I? Okay, so this is a verse. Tell us what book it comes from.
Okay.
Pride goeth before destruction, but a haughty spirit before a fall. Guys, if you know the answer to this one, 0491-064-669. That is the number to text. And our prize for this week is amazing, guys. It is a $50 gift card to Better Books and Food, one of Australia's and even maybe the world's premier book and health food shops. It is amazing. We have one, like, just up the road from us here. I'm really blessed. Like, and coming into most weekends, I'm in Better Books and Food, buying some health foods, looking at books, buying books from there occasionally as well.
Yeah, like, and you know what I love about that, Lawson? Because there is something for everyone.
Yeah.
Are you going through a certain specific life season? There's a book for you. Do you want to give a gift to a friend? There's a book for you.
Yeah.
Kids, gift. Health. There's something you can do with a $50 voucher. And it does not matter where you are in Australia. You can order online and they will ship it to you, wouldn't they, Lawson?
Yeah, absolutely. $50 gift card. That is what we're playing for. Again, in what book am I? Pride goeth before destruction, but a haughty spirit before a fall. 0491-064-669. Guys, you are listening to The Breakfast Show, and we've come to the time for some interesting news.
Some
current news. Some
current news.
Heavy news. What are we
looking at here, Jason. We do. But before I jump with, I drop the news, I also want to ask our listeners here to participate in our program. Answering the following question. When do you turn the radio? So do you catch us right after you enter into your car, before you get home? Do you get us, Lawson and I, in the middle of the show, or are you listening to Faith FM even before that? We would love to listen and to hear from you. When do you turn on the radio? What's going on when you're turning on the radio?
Absolutely. 0491-064-669. This is a bit of a listener survey, if anything, just to give us some insight. Yes. When do you switch on the radio to listen to Faith FM? If you had to switch it on early, you would have picked up, you know, Joe Cruz's sermon and some interesting things taking place in that area. But hey, if you listen at the start of the breakfast show, the middle of the breakfast show, you know, we'll ask this question throughout the show today and hopefully get some really interesting and varied answers.
Very good. Lawson, the Russian Orthodox Church, right before Easter, right before the holiday, it was already Thursday here in Australia, they released a special message. Mm-hmm. And that message was talking about family and how the family is where people learn how to love and how to have compassion on others. And so far, so good. Very Easter-friendly message, except that the church in Russia took the opportunity to say that the war, or the special military operation, as they call it internally, against Ukraine is a holy war. And I'm gonna be giving you some quotes. They said, and I quote, "From a spiritual and moral point of view, the special military operation is a holy war in which Russia and its people are defending the single spiritual space of Holy Russia." It's talking about invasion. It also went on and said that the goal of the invasion of Ukraine is protecting the world from the onslaught of globalism and the victory of the West, which has fallen into Satanism. It kept going and said that after the war, the entire territory of modern Ukraine should enter the zone of Russia's exclusive influence. And kept going, saying the possibility of the existence of a Russophobic political regime hostile to Russia and its people on this territory, as well as a political regime controlled from an external center hostile to Russia, this should be completely excluded. Do you feel that this is church language?
Yeah, it's interesting because our church is here in Australia, at least for the time I've been going to churches, hasn't engaged in language like this because we haven't really been at war with anyone. But simultaneously, like, thinking back to, say, the 1940s, Australia, part of World War II, and here in Newcastle, actually, there was an evangelist at the time. His name was George Burnside. He pitched a tent in Hamilton. If you know the big, you know, beautiful trees there in Hamilton, the park there.
Oh, yes.
He pitched a tent in Hamilton, and he preached from a biblical prophetic point of view why it was that, you know, Europe wouldn't be united under the Nazi party, and just making the point that God is in control here. And I think that when I read statements like this from the Russian Orthodox Church, we have here a real want for is almost crusadership, that, you know, the Russian soldiers that are going out and fighting are more so like crusaders who are fighting for, you know, and on the purpose of, oh, we need to stamp God's authority here and truth here. But I don't necessarily think that God is leading in this way.
No, look, Lawson, I'll tell you what I see here. I see connection between a church and a state.
Yes.
And Lawson, whenever church and politics are too meddled together, there is problems.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give you some example here. If, for example, similar to this case, the church becomes just a political voice for the government, well, then the church loses its credibility before people. It loses its importance. It loses its message. Mm-hmm. The church was organized by Jesus not to defend this prince or that government, but to proclaim the kingdom of God. And this is not happening. Yeah. This is number one thing. A second thing is sometimes it can go the other way around.
Yeah.
The other way around is the church can tell the state and the church can use the state. That's happening in the Middle Ages. We're going to be looking into that throughout our series of studies as well with the medieval church. And what happened is that then the church can use the state's military power to persecute those who think differently. So you stifle, well, at least you try to stifle people's consciences and whatever truth, which is probably going to be an error that you're trying to promote, you're going to be promoting on the basis of this word, not on the basis of people's own judgments. So I see a problem here, Lawson. I see a lot of problems here with that statement, with that meddling between the two. Jesus said, Mark 12:17, give to Caesar's what is Caesar's and to God what is to God's. So what belongs to the state? What belongs to the God? Let them deal with that. Do not mix the two things. John 18:36, my kingdom is not of this world, Jesus says. If it was, my servants will be coming here and defending me against those who are attacking me. It says, but since it's not, this doesn't matter.
Yeah.
For in that purpose. And finally, remember, you know, Isaiah chapter 2, verse 4. God is a God that is opposed to violence and war, particularly back, a war that is absolutely no sense, no judgment, no. Where did the church go with Jesus saying, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you? So whenever we have conjunction between church and state, number one, this is not biblical. Number two, this is always troublesome. And let's hear about what a few people had to say about it. The Ukrainian Orthodox Church said in its statement that about that statement from the Russian church, that it dissociates herself from, categorically rejects, and condemns the ideas set out in this document.
Yeah.
The assertion that the so-called special military operation is a holy war contradicts the basic principles of Christian morality, especially in the light of the armed aggression with the use of violence. From the point of view of the gospel, military actions cannot be justified as holy, nor can such assertions be made by people who call themselves clerics, they said. According to the Kiev-based Institute for Religious Freedom, in February 2023, so that's data from a year ago, the Russian military had destroyed by then, 1 year after the war, at least 494 religious buildings, with a figure estimated to be far higher today as well. So this was the statement that we had just from Christmas, just prior to Christmas, from the Russian Orthodox Church, Lawson.
You're listening to the Breakfast Joe podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
And before our interview today with our guest, Michael Cook, Lawson, what's question number three of our quiz to our listeners?
True or false? Haggai was Zechariah's partner in preaching, prophesying, and motivating the people of God to rebuild the temple. Haggai and Zechariah, obviously, you know, two different, you know, minor prophet books in the Bible. But hey, the question is, well, were they doing that stuff together? Were they preaching? Were they prophesying? Were they motivating the people of God to rebuild the temple? If you know the answer to that one, let us know. 0491-064-669. That is the number to text, of course. Our $50 BBF gift card is what is on the line for this week. And we asked the question, hey, when was it that you know, locked into Faith FM, put the radio on? Michael said, it's always set to Faith FM in my car. As soon as I wake up, I turn it on. So awesome stuff, Michael. Hey, if you want to let us know, when is that you switch the radio on, that you switch Faith FM on in the morning, 0491-064-669.
Well done. And now we'd like to introduce you to Michael Cook from Christian Science International. Michael, welcome to the show. Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. Welcome to all the listeners there. I bring you greetings from a cool, fresh morning in New Zealand here. Beautiful, wow. Awesome day. About 8 degrees this morning, and so it's just a beautiful, stunning day.
Oh, nice and chilly. It's great to have our Kiwis with us. And Michael, I wanted to ask you about natural selection. Look, the Bible tells us that God created life in 6 days, whereas evolution, the theory of evolution says, no, life evolved in along millions and millions of years. Is natural selection a silver bullet for one side or the other? What do we make of that?
That's a really good question. Yes, so the Bible is very clear that, you know, God created everything in 6 days, but he created things by kinds, and he would have created them as the master designer with a huge amount of potential in their genetics. You know, the DNA would have carried a huge potential. And so, yes, and then over time, from the fall onwards, we've seen a decline in genetic fitness over the, you know, the millennia since the creation. Evolution, of course, needs to start with almost nothing. Well, nothing. Hydrogen gas, you know, over billions of years evolved upwards, increasing information to what we have today. So it's all about the information. Are we selecting away from existing information, or are we actually creating new information? And so natural selection and evolution are not the same thing. So it's really important to understand the difference. Natural selection is a scientific fact. It was actually a creationist, Edward Blyth, who first noted that certain traits would give you an advantage in a situation which would help your survivability, and therefore you have more offspring, and therefore that particular trait would become more common in a population. But of course, that selects away from what was there already. It may give you an advantage, but it's not actually gaining anything as far as information goes.
So, Michael, could it be that is this a plausible thing to affirm, that God, when he created this variety of species, and you said with the potential for diversity, he had already created them in their genomes with tools that would give them an edge over certain environments even before they were exposed to that certain environment? Is that even possible?
I think it is, definitely. I mean, God foreknew, you know, the whole situation. And yeah, so the potential there is there for every type of environment to be, I guess, adapted for. So natural selection, adaptation, speciation are things that we would expect from the Bible. So one thing I want to just debunk, sometimes people hold up what we call a straw man argument, saying that God created all the species we have today on, you know, at creation and nothing has changed. Mm. Well, that's false. You know, animals, creatures, plants do change, but the type of change is where it's important. So you're right. Yes, you know, for example, we always use the example of dogs. You know, all the dog varieties we have today, wild and you know, artificial breeds, domestic breeds, all come from an original wolf-like ancestor just a few thousand years ago. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, they would have been medium height, erect ears, long tail, medium length fur, but they would have potential to have long fur, short fur, and floppy ears and all that sort of thing, which are due to mutation. So over time, these things have become sets in different ways. So a hunting dog in Africa will be quite different to, say, a husky in the cold area, mm-hmm. and yet they come from that original kind. Interestingly, even a Chihuahua and a Great Dane are actually the same species. Biologically, they're classed as the same species. you imagine if you dug up a fossil of a Great Dane and a Chihuahua, you wouldn't even think they were the same kind, would you, let alone the same species?
So that's incredible. Yeah,
so sometimes the body form is, you know, fossils don't always tell the whole story. But you see, what's happened is that if all the dogs in the world died apart from Chihuahuas, you're never going to go back because you've lost so many other traits. Mm-hmm. And the traits for largeness and so on. So people can understand when you select away, you may have an advantage, but you're never going to be able to go backwards. It's a one-way mm-hmm. trip downward.
Oh, wow. And one example that often comes to my mind when evolutionists are talking about natural selection, they would describe things such as, for example, moths and butterflies that in places with lots of pollution, for example, they would turn from their typical brownish into a darker, even black color. How does that play up in the whole scheme of God's creation?
That's a really good point. And I'm sure actually many of your listeners will already know about our website, creation.com. Really encourage you to go and have a look at that. So the example you're quoting there, which is a good one, is about the peppered moths, which are in the UK. And they had different, you know, levels of of darkness, I guess, in their wings and so on. And, you know, as the Industrial Revolution increased the amount of pollution, the trees became darker. So the story, as the story went, ones that were lighter would then be picked away by birds. And therefore, the darker moths became more common because they were less likely to be predated. But all we're seeing is the information for dark and light pigments in the wings was already there. All that's happening is the amount, the ratio of light and dark moths changes over time. Same with Charles Darwin and the finches on the Galapagos Islands, long and short beak. They would vary depending on food sources, but nothing new was being created. It was just the number of each type that were predominating.
So you're saying that it's not that environment is creating new information to the DNA, but what's happened is that the information was there, it's just being manifested, but it's no new information being created on the account of the environment. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Yes, you're not gaining new genes for dark coloration on your wings or a longer beak or a shorter beak. The potential is already there in the genome. All that's happening is the environment is actually favouring or giving an advantage to a particular expression of that. So exactly, no new information, no new specific information has been created at all. And even examples like antibiotic resistance, people say, well, surely that's evolution, you know, superbugs and so on. But in actual fact, if you look at what actually happens, we've got some great articles on our website, creation.com, about antibiotic resistance, about peppered moths and Galapagos finches and so on. But even bugs that actually have a antibiotic resistance, they find that they actually are favoured because other types have been killed off, you know, in a hospital environment. But they haven't actually gained anything new. They've had some damage to one particular function that may give them an advantage when they have antibiotic pressure on them. But the overall, their general fitness is actually less fit than the wild kind. Same with purebred dogs. They're less fit than the mongrel kind, you see. So you may have an advantage, but you're generally overall less fit.
That is so interesting. It reminds me of an analogy that I once heard. Imagine if there was some kind of disease that only affected people with teeth, and people with teeth will die, and all of a sudden what you have left are human beings with no teeth, and people say, oh, look, evolution happening here. People with no teeth. Well, it's not necessarily an evolution. In that case, it was an advantage for that specific time, but there's no new or even better complexity happened here by those who remained alive in that situation. Is that a similar dynamics that you're talking about when it comes to the antibiotics dynamics, isn't it?
It is, that's right. And another great example is, there's two other examples which are really good to look at. One is, on islands, often you get interesting populations of creatures. Well, there are a number of populations of wingless beetles on islands, and you find if you have a windy island, if there's a mutation that damages the genome, meaning that wings don't get expressed, so you end up with beetles with no wings, they're less likely to get blown away and blown into the sea and drowning. See, so over time, wingless beetles will actually predominate because winged ones tend to get wiped out. Same with cavefish, that may have damage to their eyes due to genetic mutation and damage, but that's an advantage in a cave because you're less likely to have injured eyes, you know, infections and so on. You don't need to see anyway. See? So they have an advantage in a cave, but overall they've lost something. They've lost eyes or they've lost wings, you see.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, what's broken? You have to ask, what's been broken?
Yes, that's so interesting. Sometimes having something broken can be an advantage depending on the environment that you are, but it's definitely not the case overall. Michael, I want to ask you about polar bears? Are they a distinct species of a bear, or how does the natural selection, you know, played in that particular case?
That's a really good question. So when you look at all the different kinds, including the big cats, bears and so on, you'll find that polar bears, grizzly bears, brown bears and so on are actually all from the same biblical kind. Mm-hmm. They can actually hybridize. You can get grizzlies and polar bears hybridizing. So they are a different species. It depends on what you define a species as. But yes, they are derived from the same ancestors, but they have an advantage with their outer white coat, you know, in the snow and so on. Whereas, you know, so grizzly bears, for example, have other advantages. So over time, the environment they've been living in has favoured the lighter coat. but they are of the same biblical kind. Same with lions, tigers, cheetahs. They all come from the same biblical kind, and over time they've diversified out. But they can, many of them can still hybridize. You can have lions and tigers can actually interbreed and form a liger or a tigon. You see, so they show that they came from the same kinds, but you can never go outside the kinds.
Oh, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
So do you think it could be possible, if we're talking about a reduced number of kinds, the ones that originated all the variety that we had today, that they would fit into Noah's Ark? Because one of objections that I often hear is that you could not possibly fit all of life's Earth's diversity in Noah's Ark. It would be impossible. But if we're talking about ancestor kinds, as you mentioned, for example, the case of the dogs and big cats and even bears, do you think that would make it possible then?
It would, yes. Again, that's a really good and well-asked question, because many people say, well, Noah's Ark, the flood doesn't bear up to scrutiny, and the Ark is just a fairy tale and so on. But when you look at the kinds and you look at the feasibility of the Ark, the size of it, the number of creatures, it's actually very feasible. And so the estimates were there was probably 8 to 16,000 individuals on the Ark. Most of them are fairly small when you look at the different types of kinds there were. And so the Ark wouldn't have carried a lion and a tiger and a cheetah and a puma and so on. It would have been the original representatives of the cat kind and the cattle kind and the horse kind and so on. Things like mules and they're called zebras and horses all come from the same kind, you see. So you don't need the individual species. And so the number of individuals is much, much less than people believe.
That's very interesting. Another question that I wanted to ask you is about the Drosophila fly, you know, that little fruit fly that usually flies over bananas. Because they were being hailed as holding the key for evolution, and they've been interbreeding them and doing all kinds of genetic experiments because of their lifespan. Can you tell us a little bit about that? You know, have the evolutionistic theory gotten any insights by the studies with Drosophilus?
Drosophila is an amazing creature because of the generation time is so short. You can do a lot of experiments quickly and see what happens, and they've had some amazing things come out of that, like multiple eyes on fruit flies and expressions in different ways and so on. But I think the more they have studied fruit flies and other even bacteria, which have an even faster reproduction time, you find that these things just don't stack up. So the more and more we're finding that mutations damage, natural selection selects, but nothing is actually creating new novel specific information. So fruit fly studies and other studies increasingly are showing that evolution, you know, from microbes to man is just not tenable. All the change we observe is in the wrong direction, including those studies which have been done by many people. So we've got some good articles again on look up fruit flies, look up mutations, and you'll find some great case studies of the things you're talking about.
That's very interesting. It just looks like that the whole premise of increasing complexity, increasing genetic traits, we just don't find that in nature, do we? It's still foreign to us, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And obviously things that are designed have a designer, and it talks in Romans 1, doesn't it? The things of God are plain by the things he has made, you know, his ways, his invisible attributes. And when we look at the incredible design of, just everything we see around us, we are without excuse.
Absolutely. And, Michael, thank you so much. Could you tell us again the name of the website that you invited our listeners to have a check?
Yes, certainly. Please go on to creation.com. That's what you need to remember. It's creation.com.
Creation.com.
And we've got thousands of articles on there. We've got our YouTube channels, videos, things you can download, you can search, covering a whole range of topics, scientific, theological, that will really build up your faith, give you answers that will show you that God's word can be trusted from the very first verse.
Michael Cook, thank you very much.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.